Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted.
The podcast for those who are done people pleasing and living life on autopilot.
I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformation for those who are ready to survive and reclaim their power.
Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours.
So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms.
This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today I have Michelle. So Michelle, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, my name is Michelle Steiner. I live in Pennsylvania with my husband, Ron, and our two cats, Jack and Sparrow. I am a writer, a speaker, and a photographer, and I have a blog called Michelle's Mission, where I write about my life with a learning disability. And I also work in a school as a teacher's aide for students with and some without disabilities, too.
Very nice. So, Michelle, how would you describe survival mode?
I would say survival mode is one of these switches. You can turn light on, but the light truly isn't really on for you. You're just going through a lot of emotions with that. And it's not until you finally get through and you're able to switch and truly have it on that it just starts to fill the room and you're able to be able to experience everything. And you're not just trying to get through the moment.
I agree with you 100%. A huge part of survival mode is just that autopilot, just existing. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us your story to and through survival mode?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My first thing with happening in survival mode is I was diagnosed with a learning disability whenever I was in kindergarten. My teacher noticed that I was really struggling in the classroom. Just with a lot of different things. I had trouble with writing my name, tying my shoes. And in the very beginning, I was not one of those people that could mask having a disability. I was somebody that everybody could tell. I was an only child for 13 years, and I was visibly frustrated. And sure enough, I had one. And all throughout my years of school, it was about surviving. I really struggled socially. I also struggled academically in school. And I was really lucky in a lot of ways, though, to have the support and the help that I needed. But it also was a game of survival. Yeah. I mean, sometimes if I was in my classes, I never knew. I had to repeat kindergarten that year. So I always had that fear in the back of my head. Oh, am I going to not be able to pass something? And am I going to have to repeat another grade? That was always a real big thing for me. And I also had to be like in survival mode. When I was dealing with peers, it was really difficult, especially in the beginning, too, because I really stuck out. I went to a very small school district where I couldn't hide having a disability. I was just really stuck in that point of everybody knew I went to learning support, everybody knew I had one, and the bullying started very early. And even as an adult, I still had to go through survival mode. It was really hard. Because I had a lot of people telling me that I couldn't go to college, I couldn't have the job that I wanted, and I was struggling a lot of those areas. And I just I leaned into a lot of that for a lot of those years. It was survival mode. It was just going through a lot of those motions, going to school, going to work, doing all that stuff. But it wasn't until I'm in my late 20s that I was able to break out a lot of that survival mode and stop masking. And be able to achieve a lot of things as well.
Beautiful. So let's start with, the school system as a whole. As a parent who has chosen to homeschool, particularly because of the negative experience that I had as a child, I was on the other end of the spectrum, highly gifted and operating years beyond my peers. And I remember being about maybe nine, and the school wanting to skip me into high school. So I would have skipped maybe three grades at that, and go into high school. And my mom made the decision to keep me with my age group rather than excel me and have me around people that were much older. But as a result of that, I was bored and highly bored. Like, it's like teaching a 17-year-old ABCs. Like, I struggled, and then I was labeled, because what do bored children do? They find something to entertain themselves. And so when I had my kids, I identified quite early that one of my children is highly gifted, like myself. And I didn't want her to have the same experience as me. So I decided to keep them home. And I said all of that to say, the educational system, the school system was created, in my opinion, to make ideal employees, right? Like, yes, we have to learn things, but it was, when you look at the history of the school system, it was really created in the Industrial Revolution. Well, now we need a mass of people to enter into, factories and work. So we now teach you the things that are necessary for that, but we also teach you group thought. We also teach you how to fall in line and not have your own identity. So I can relate to you in a lot of ways, because of my own experience. And as we also know, children are brutal.
They are.
Brutal. So I can imagine the impact of that bullying over the years, right? Like, it's one thing to have confidence, but then to be systematically broken down continuously, it is such a burden. My question is, you said, you managed in your 20s to get, more control. What did that look like for you?
That is when I went back to school. I already had my associates in early childhood education. I was really enjoying being on my own because I'm not able to drive because of my disability. But then I always wanted more for myself. And be careful what you wish for, because that's exactly what happened. I ended up moving back in with my parents. And it was that time I thought, I'm going to give university a try. And I really researched what the right program was for me. It had to have the least amount of math and science possible, and I had to like what I was doing. And when I was there, I found out when I started to advocate for myself and I started to get into a program that I liked to do and used all the accommodations that they offered, I did so much better. My grades improved. I made Dean's List for a semester, and I graduated with a bachelor's degree despite being told I couldn't do it. And when I did that, thank you, I just had all that confidence. My disability didn't go away, and it never will, but I can still have, I learned, oh, I can have success with this as long as I'm doing things that I like to do and I'm able to do. Because there are a lot of things that, sure, I mean, people might think lazy, and you go and you do some of those things and it just doesn't really work out that way. And I have to also really like that, because I find when I really am in a lot of doing those things, I feel really empowered. And if I'm focusing on what I can't do or what I'm really struggling with, I really don't feel that way. So I think it's, I started to recognize that and made my peace that there's things I can do and there's things I can't do.
It's interesting that you say that, because I talk heavily about the three phases of accident survival mode. The first is self-awareness, the second is reprogramming, and the third is reinvention. And a lot of what you spoke to just now was that reprogramming element, right? When I work with clients, when we are in that reprogramming phase, it's a re-examination of our definition of success, a reprogramming of a re-examination of our definition with the values that we have. And then it's about making sure that the actions that we take and the things that we do are aligned with the things that we enjoy, rather than just ticking a box because we have to do it, right? And I know a large part of the way society conditions us is we do all the things even if we don't like it. But I think that's fallacious, simply because a lot of people get stuck having to do things that they don't want to do. Now, obviously, there are things that we have to do that perhaps we may not like, but that isn't everything.
Right.
And I think we find more fulfillment when we can lean into the things that we are strong at. And as someone who runs a business, one of the things that I learned very early on is you cultivate your strengths and then you outsource your weaknesses.
Yes. True. Yeah, because I mean, everybody has something that they can do. And something they can't do, or something that they struggle with. And I don't know many people that, if they have a choice, they're going to engage in an activity that they don't like. I know people that do not like art or do not like to read. So maybe they'll do that if they have to at their job with reading or whatever they need to do, and they can do it. But if they're out on their own time, they're not going to engage in those things too. So I agree.
Yes, and that's the real world, right? Like like you said, unless we have to do it for our job, or maybe because we're parenting, or the things that, like, you have build obligations.
Yeah.
In real life, we're not doing things that we don't like. And obviously, I understand in having a curriculum and following the curriculum to the T, because it leads to the next step. But I definitely think the restriction in the school system is forcing things on people. Like, let me tell you, I am 43 years old. I have not used any element of physics in my real life.
Right.
Like, I know it's part of my life, right? But the last time I calculated the force of something was when I was 15. And if I had a choice, these would not be the things that I would focus on. I would have given myself the opportunity to explore more the things that lit me up, because it would have motivated me to want to do more.
Exactly. And that's something with the students that I work with. A lot of them will tell me, I hate this subject. When am I ever going to use this? And rather than try to give them 50 million reasons how they're going to use it, I just simply tell them, someday you will have that choice. We give you the information, but it's up to you how you're going to use it in your future. If you don't like history, well, right now you need to learn it, but eventually, someday when you're older, and you can turn the History Channel off if you don't like that. If somebody doesn't like art, they don't have to go and draw something. If you're not big on math, then, well, you don't get a job that involves a lot of math. You'll decide how much you're going to use something. But all of those things have value. And it's all a part of our lives and our culture, but it's just that how much you want to take it and how much you want to study that. And I also think with education too, there are some things I think it's important to teach, but I wish that we were going at it and I wasn't getting it, that we would have just not focused on that and we would have moved on to something else. For example, my handwriting has never been that great. I think you should know how to write, but if a kid can't, don't not to shame them. And also, if we would have learned how to type at an earlier age, once I learned how to do that, that was a real game changer for me. And another thing was, I was not able to ever read the Facebook clock with my disability. And I can remember we had that in elementary school and everybody was like, oh, you're going to have to do this someday. And I've gone through my life with other ways of being able to cope with having my Fitbit, with having digital clocks. Do I think it's an important skill to maybe try to teach and give exposure to? Absolutely. But if somebody's just not getting it, I think rather than waste time around that, we need to figure out, well, what is going to work?
I agree with you completely. So when you decided to go back mm-hmm. and do your bachelor's, yeah. did you have a process for eliminating the things that you didn't like getting clarity around what would be good for you?
What I did was I knew for myself what I was good at, because whenever I went to community college, that gave me that understanding of, oh, I'm really good in English classes. I'm really good psychology courses. I always did pretty well with that. But anything that involved math or science, I knew that it's been the same since I've been that young student in school. It has really been a challenge. So that was a big factor that I thought about. And I also look for alternatives. When I was at community college, I was able to get a math waiver because I couldn't even pass the basic math requirement to get into an algebra class. But when I went to university, I didn't have that option. Instead, what I did was I decided to take a philosophy-based math course. And there's a really funny story behind that. I was on the fence whether I should try to just do an algebra class or take that philosophy-based course. And I was sitting somewhere and there was a chess game. And this guy asked me, well, do you want to play chess? And I said, sure. And we had the world's shortest chess game in history. And spoiler alert, I lost. And he looked at me and I said, oh yeah, I have a math disability and I'm really deciding what math course I want to take. If I should do an algebra course or if I should just do a philosophy-based math course. And he said, I'm in that department. A lot of my colleagues aren't very nice. I go with the philosophy-based math course. And I took that. And I really struggled. I did not pass the class, any of the test. I mean, but the teacher knew I was struggling. And he knew I was trying. He knew I was going to class. He knew I was going to office hours. And he also knew that I was doing hours of tutoring a week and all the accommodations. So he gave me a D. And I was able to pass it. And I didn't need to have a higher grade than that. I just needed to pass the class. So I think that was the big thing too. And I think also that advocacy part too was really big too. I remember whenever I was scheduling for classes and I told them, oh, I have a math disability. I'm not really good at math. And they were looking at the courses that were open. He said, well, how about you take chemistry? And I looked at him and I said, absolutely not. Because I knew going into the class that it was going to be a struggle. But there was a lot of things that were going right that I could take. I took community programming for Americans with Disabilities. That was my major. And it was the service end of special education. So a lot of my professors were teachers that were learning support teachers before they went to university to be college professors. So they really understood what I was going through. And they always wanted to give me my perspective. And I learned so much about my disability that I didn't even know about. And then I would take, like, I knew I would do well when I took the psychology courses. That was something I enjoyed doing. And some recreational therapy courses. I loved doing that. I even took an acting class, which this was really funny because I didn't use any, none of the accommodations would have applied, that I ended up getting an A in the class without them. So if I was focusing on what I could do and what I was good at, I was, the good grades came. But if I went into, now other classes were more difficult though.
Mm-hmm. What you talked about here, like, raises a very interesting point in relation to survival mode, and that is being able to utilize the resources that are available. A lot of times people silo themselves, particularly when they're in survival mode, because they have this narrative that someone wouldn't understand and no one will be able to help. And I celebrate you utilizing what was around you in order for you to attain your goals, and with the obvious limitations that you had as a result of your learning disability. And the reason why I point that out, audience, is because healing or progressing when we have these major hurdles often requires a community.
Right.
And if we aren't comfortable enough to advocate for ourselves, to pursue the things that will help us move forward, essentially we stay stuck. And it's about us taking radical ownership so that we can attain the things that we want in life. And it's not about being a victim, because you could have said, wow, I can't even get into algebra. So why would I even try college or university? Why would I even attempt this? But you didn't limit yourself, right? You were able to push past what would have been fear, hesitation, you know, our ultimate desires of not to be abandoned or misunderstood, but you were able to push past that and in alignment with your goals so that you can move yourself forward.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I had to do. I had to look for those resources, and I had to find what I could do, because I think sometimes that's always the puzzle too, of what to do. I'll have people, professionals sometimes will look at my test scores and they'll think, well, she can't really go to college, or she's not going to be able to have this kind of job. I have people that told me I wasn't going to be able to get published, or I wasn't going to be able to do news articles and do a lot of these things. And I was able to do all of that. Now, there are things I can't do, and they were correct on that. But I just think that I knew. In fact, my mom was even at that point whenever I was trying to find jobs, and they were sending me out to these places, and I was doing menial tasks like circling jobs that I was interested in. My mom goes, I think you're better on your own. You seem to know what you want to do and what you're capable of.
Yeah. I think it's a huge part of it is just getting honest with ourselves, right? Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times we lean into the societal expectations and we lean in to the external validation as well. But actually, we are in so much more control of our lives than we often give ourselves credit for. And when we recognize that, that's when major shifts happen for us.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
So what are you doing now?
Right now, I have a blog called Michelle's Mission, where I write about my life with having a disability. I use a lot of nature analogies. I might talk about the process of a flower blooming is how I accepted my disability, or the transformation process of a butterfly. And I try to make that simple so people with disabilities can understand, but also people who have never heard of some of these disabilities are able to know that too. I also feature my photography. I'm not able to drive because of my disability. So if I'm lucky that my husband can take me to work, and I have a very sweet coworker that can take me home at the end of the day. But if I don't have a ride, I often will take a lot of walks to get to where I need to go, because I'm back in the central location again. And I get to notice details that other people will miss. I get to see flowers. I get to see other really neat things. And people will tell me, well, you bring out the details in a flower that I miss. And I get to capture those moments when I'm on my walks. I literally get to stop and smell the roses. And rather than being upset that I have to walk, I get that opportunity in life to just to be able to just relax and get to see and notice all those details. And I would be so sad if I was behind the wheel of a car and I would be so focused. There's so many things that I would miss.
You essentially spoke about being present. just now. And yep. I think that is one element of life that most of us aren't equipped to do. Like we do, but we hardly be. And there's a big difference between doing and being. And, you know, even your description just now of being able to see a flower differently than everyone else, that's presence. That is being able to really appreciate your surroundings and really appreciate the moment. And I respect that wholeheartedly. But you also mentioned acceptance. And acceptance, I think, is a word that people hate.
Yes, they do.
But I think it's key in being able to move ourselves forward, right? There are things in our lives that we don't like. We are in complete, disagreement with. But they are things that we cannot change. And as long as we're fighting the things that we cannot change, we are missing out on so much. And when we can get to a level of acceptance, I think it's key in being able to move ourselves forward. It's being key in being able to take control of our lives, because it allows us to put down the victim hat and really just take ownership.
Exactly. It's that acceptance of, okay, I can't change this about myself. I am that way. And even though other people don't always understand, I have people that'll say, well, can't you just learn how to do math, and or can't somebody teach you? And I have to just say, well, no, that's not a possibility. And some people don't understand it, but I do, and I think that's the key thing. And another thing, I work with a lot of students that, as a paraeducator, it's like, here we get recording myself at that age. I hate my disability. I wish I didn't have an individualized education plan, and I get to be that voice that tells them, it's okay to have the disability. It's all right to do that. I might even have students that'll tell me, oh, I have this mental health disability and I take meds for it, so I don't have to put in anything else. And I'm like, the meds are only going to do a certain amount of stuff. You're going to have to put a lot of hard work into this. And I show them how to advocate from the time they're very young, because so many of my students, they're going to leave me someday and graduate. And I want them, but for so many of them, their disability is going to stay there. And I want them to know how to be able to speak up and how to manage that.
Absolutely. And I love that you are now reaching back and helping others, because that's important, right? Representation in any part of our journey is so key, because unless someone truly understands what we're going through, it's easy to dismiss.
Yeah.
The small intricacies that we experience. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that one thing, I understand what a lot of them are going through. Not everybody, but I understand what a large majority of them are thinking and feeling at that age. And that's not something that I think someone that doesn't have a disability can really understand. It can relate to it in that experience. I think if I didn't have it, I used to always wonder, well, what could come out of having one? And I honestly think I would always have that desire and that drive to help other people, but I don't know if I would have the empathy to be able to truly understand what someone's going through unless I went through it myself.
And empathy and compassion, empathy, compassion, and grace are the things that we need so much more in life, in this world. Having an understanding of what other people are going through and having compassion around that is key, because then it allows people to be seen. And at our very core, that's all we truly want, right? Like to be seen. And so I celebrate you and your journey, and I really appreciate you sharing this with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, absolutely. So you have your blog, you have you do your photography. How can we connect with you online to learn more?
You can find me at my blog at www.michellesmission.com, and I'm also on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Okay, well, we will make sure all of that information is in the show notes. Before we wrap it all up, Michelle, one key takeaway to someone who might be listening and recognizing that they are stuck in survival mode.
One of the things I would just encourage somebody to do is just to walk forward into the light And not to be afraid of that, and also to be that light, and not to just go to walk in a world that's dim, but to go in a world full of color and brightness.
I love that. Be the light, you guys. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Michelle, for joining us on Survival Mode Disrupted. Listeners, thank you for catching another episode. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Leticia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth. You're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.